Okay, we are continuing to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, titled The Characteristics of King Puranjana, Text 35. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudiraye Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Ete Sakhaya Sakyome Nara Naryascha Manadham Suptayamai Jagrati Suptayamai Jagarti Nagoyam Palayan Purim Ete Sakaya Sakyome Nara Naryascha Manadha Suptayamai Jagarti Nagoyam Palayan Purim Ete Sakhaya Sakyome Nara Naryascha Manada Suptayamai Jagarti Nagoyam Palayan Purim. Word to word meaning Ete. All these. Sakayaha. Male friends. Sakyaha. Female associates. Me. My. Naraha. Men. Naryaha. Women. Cha. And. Manada, O very respectful one, Suptayam, while sleeping, Mayi, I am, Jagarti, keeps awake, Nagaha, snake, I am, this, Palayan, protecting, Purim, this city. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My dear gentlemen, all these men and women with me are known as my friends, and the snake who always remains awake protects the city even during my sleeping hours. So much I know, I do not know anything beyond this. Purport. Puranjana inquired from the woman about those 11 men and their wives and the snake. The woman gave a description of them. She was obviously without full knowledge of her surrounding men and women and the snake. As stated before, the snake is the vital force of the living being. This vital force always remains awake even when the body and the senses become fatigued and do not work. Even in the state of unconsciousness, when we sleep, the snake or the life force remains intact and awake. Consequently, we dream when we sleep. When the living entity gives up this material body, the vital force still remains intact and is carried to another material body. That is called transmigration or change of the body, and we have come to know this process as death. Actually, there is no death. The vital force always exists with the soul, and when the soul is awakened from so-called sleep, he can see his 11 friends or the active senses and the mind with their various desires, wives. The vital force remains. Even during our sleeping hours, we can understand by virtue of our breathing process that the snake lives by eating the air that passes within this body. Air is exhibited in the form of breathing, and as long as breath is there, one can understand that a sleeping man is alive. Even when the gross body is asleep, the vital force remains active and alive to protect the body. Thus the snake is described as living and eating air to keep the body fit for life. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruho Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namasude Aptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadada Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare The living entity in this material world thinks that he is the enjoyer or he is the king. At least with respect to his body, he thinks that he is the Lord. Lord Krishna wanted to tease Mother Rukmini and he started to state various reasons why she should reject him and choose another husband so that her current life and her future life will be better than what she has at the moment. So when describing himself, he will say that I am not a king. Many of them don't know whether I am a son of Nanda Maharaj or son of Vasudev, neither here nor there, I am penniless. He will state a lot of reasons and he will also tell that anyone who takes shelter of me, look at the girls of the Vrindavan, they are all crying and they have, whoever takes shelter of me, that's what will happen. So Krishna's idea was to provoke her, and in the Krishna book it's described that the pleasure which exists in the between husband and wife is they exchange such kind of jokes, and Krishna as a householder, he is creating such a situation where the wife will chastise him and then he relishes that kind of a mellow. But Mother Rukmini personally was fanning the Lord. And then she actually started to cry and she had intense emotion and out of fear that Krishna might leave me. And she was in extreme anxiety. She was checking her tears and she was about to doze off, that means fall down because of excess of fear. At that time Krishna exhibits his four arms and then consoles her, saying that I was just trying to have fun with you. I didn't expect that you will react so much to this. After coming back to her senses, so Mother Rukmini will take up every point which Krishna mentioned and then she will counteract those points. So when she counteracts the points of Krishna, as I was reading this section of Krishna book, she makes interesting points about who is actually the king in this material world. These are the words of Mother Rukmini. My dear husband, you have rightly said that you have taken shelter in the water of the sea as if you are afraid of the kings. But who are the kings of this material world? I do not think that the so-called royal families are kings of this material world. The kings of the material world are the three modes of material nature, who are actually its controllers. So she is bringing up this point about how one may think that he is the controller and he is independent. But she makes a strong point that the kings may think themselves as controller, but the actual king in this material world is the modes of material nature, which was discussed also earlier about the golden, then the silver and the copper compared to the modes of material nature. Interestingly, in the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna describes in the 13th chapter how the living entity enters into a particular type of body based on his own desires. The material nature actually creates him a variety of body to pick from. So both the material nature and the living entity have been there eternally. Material nature gives him various facilities and he picks up a particular type of body, and in the purport Prabhupada explains, we will look at it soon, that the body is like a residential quarters. So, we may think ourselves to be controllers, but actually it is the, as per Mother Rukmini, kings of the material world are the modes of material nature. So she continues, you are situated in the core of everyone's heart, where you remain completely aloof from the touch of the three modes of material nature, and there is no doubt about it. So in the 13th chapter, it is described that the super soul is the cause of all the senses. Although he is the cause of all the senses, he himself is without senses, which means he is without the material senses and he has got spiritual senses. In purport, in one of the verses in that chapter, Prabhupada describes the soul also has spiritual senses. Yeah, so these are verses 13, 21, 22, where nature is the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyment in this world. Yeah, in previous verse also Prabhupada describes material nature and living entity should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformations and the modes of matter are products of material nature. Now, why such a detailed explanation is there in the Bhagavatam is to give us an elaboration of what was covered in the Bhagavad Gita. To what extent we are being covered and what are the different elements that are covering us. And now from a preaching perspective, Narad Muni is acting like a, at least I felt, he's acting like a expert surgeon. He is going to do an operation, which means it's going to be painful. But before that, he's putting the anesthesia, getting the patient ready. So this whole allegory, I felt, is like that surgeon who's going to do a, who's going to cut, basically. It's going to be painful. But he's doing it in a way that the person does not feel so much of pain. Later on, Puranjana will inquire in detail to Narad Muni what exactly is he talking about. So such detailed explanations are given so that the living entity, which is making detailed plans in this world to live and enjoy, by reading these detailed explanations, they can come back to their senses and make those detailed plan to serve the Lord. Unless we know that we have a spiritual body, we have spiritual senses, and we are meant to engage the senses in the service of the Lord, we would not be able to get out of this cycle of birth and death. As described in this verse, that the living entity is ignorant of how it came into this material world, when it came, what are the coverings. As the woman is replying, so much I know, I do not know anything beyond this, which is basically ignorant of your own field that you are in. So when I ask a person who is standing in the in a bus stop or a train stop, if I ask him a question, where did you come from? He would give me an answer. And then, where are you going towards? Which bus are you taking and where are you heading? Ideally he should be having an answer, either you are on a bus or a train. For that matter, if you are in the airport, you should be knowing where are you coming from, where are you going. If we step back and then ask those questions like, where did we come from? How did we enter this material world? Where did we come from? What am I meant to do in this world? And after my end, where am I going? Any sane man standing in a bus stop or a railway station or an airport will have answers for those. If they don't, people around them will think, are you okay? Or like, you don't seem to be knowing. But everybody is in that ignorant position where when we consider this whole world as a bus stop or an airport or a train station, when we are asked, where did we come from? At the max, we can say, from my parents. That's good, they gave us the body. So the living force, where does that come from? Then we are transmigrating within this same body. If we look at our own picture, when it is taken at 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, you can do this exercise when you go home. If you look at your old pictures, how the aspect of body keeps on changing, but it's not that when you're 5 years old, one person resides, and then when you're 10 years old, somebody else will come and reside in the body, and then when you're 15 years old, someone else will come and reside in the same body. No, it's the same person who's residing, but the body keeps changing. But you still are the same person. It's not that for every birthday some other person comes and lives in your body. So what is changing, what is unchanging, that's where the way out begins, by understanding how did we get in and then who we actually are. So that's why in the 13th chapter Krishna describes the field of activities, and every verse or a few verses in the Bhagavad Gita, detailed explanation is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Like when Krishna says, I appear every millennium and annihilate the demons and protect the pious people. So that's probably few verses. So that gets expanded in the Bhagavatam. You see, okay, how Lord Varahadeva appears, Lord Narasimhadeva appears, and then they do the activity of protecting the devotees and annihilating the demons. Similarly, when Krishna describes in the Gita about how the living entity gets caught up and how the material nature and the living entity both are eternal, living entity is superior even though both are prakriti. The living entity is superior, whereas material nature is inferior. But when the superior living entity comes in contact with the material nature, he thinks himself to be a product of material nature. So many times we are told to be a good boy or a good girl. So I'm wearing this sweater. If somebody tells me, you are the sweater, so be a nice sweater, okay? Throughout your life, you should be a good sweater. So that's what gets told to us, that you are this and you behave like this, and that's how throughout your life you must be identifying yourself as, I am a male, I am a female. But unless we have somebody of the caliber of Srila Prabhupada coming and in fact spoon feeding us with his purports, this, when I see this word to word meaning, it's like a merciful father mashing the food and spoon feeding, so that we come out of this mentality of enjoying. So we are given this knowledge. And also the process of acquiring the knowledge is also described in the 13th chapter, where one has to be exhibit qualities like humility, pridelessness, tolerance, and then a whole list is given. And that Krishna describes is knowledge. Everything else is ignorance. Now, because we are conditioned by these kind of senses, we have to take shelter of the Lord, who is aloof from this material nature. Only a person who is not overcome by a disease can actually give us a medicine and cure us. Only a person who is capable of swimming can take us out of this cycle of birth and death. And that's why the spiritual master is often referred to as a captain of the ship, which takes us, which will take us beyond this ocean of material suffering. I'm trying to recollect that analogy where the spiritual master is the captain, and then the, what is the boat?
The boat is the body.
Boat is the body. Human body is a boat. Okay. And then the favorable winds are the scriptures. So here we are, very rare human birth, because we can't expect animals to inquire and make these kind of questions. Where did you come from? Where are you going? All I know is, where is my next food? Where can I sleep? Where can I mate? And then they're helplessly, they die. So, other than that, they do not know much. But human life is something very special. As Prabhupada describes about this transmigration, we have transmigrated from aquatics, jalaja navalakshani stavara laksha vrinshati krimaya rudra samkhyaka pakshinam dasa lakshanam. So 8,400,000 species, if somebody is inquisitive, they can go through the Puranas and find out how many species are there and how long it takes for us to go through all those species. And we have come in this human form of life, which is very rare. It is highly recommended that at least in this human form of life, one takes this process really seriously. As far as the transmigration is concerned, there are many verses in the Gita which describe, and in particularly the 13th chapter, where based on your consciousness, you pick up a particular type of body, where you are given this human form of life. But Prabhupada describes in the purpose that if you behave like a hog or a dog, next life you will be given that particular type of a body, where you start acting like that. But if you are from the human form of life, if you are acting with elevated consciousness, then you may get a body of a demigod. Now, the biggest hope-giving aspect is that we have the choice, we have the power to choose. Because in that chapter, the responsibility of the living entity is also described by Krishna, making this point that material nature is the cause of various combination of body, but the suffering or enjoyment that comes from those various arrangements, that is due to the living entity. So the living entity is the cause of various suffering and enjoyment, whereas material nature is the cause of giving you a variety of the bodies. So it's up to the living entity how he wants to make use of the field that he is in, and it's up to him to elevate his consciousness and put himself in a favorable situation, as described in the analogy, like the spiritual master is there and the Vedic scriptures are given to us. We can't say that I don't have access to the scriptures. Yes, it's right with us. One has to take advantage of that. Thereby, you don't have to go get another body and transmigrate. Many times, this life that we have in this material world itself is considered as a dream. You are in a dream state, you are meant to awaken. A dream itself is an interesting aspect, where you have a lot of desires, which is described here as the wives. So as soon as you go to sleep, if you are lucky, you get to sleep early. And but if you are in a disturbed state where you're not fully in sleep, that's where the dream comes up. So Your body as such is not moving, and the vital force is there in the body, which means the prana is there, which means you're not dead. Now, the various desires that are there in the subconscious mind, now, even though the body is not moving, the mind which is active at this moment starts to dwell on those desires, and you may start to enjoy by having a good dream or suffer by having a bad dream. Prabhupada explains about how you might have seen gold and you may see a mountain when you are awake. In the dream you may see a golden mountain which does not exist. So what we put in when we are awake into our consciousness determines what will come up in our dreams. So that's why Prabhupada's plan is to have hot milk and read Krishna book in the night, so that you dream about Krishna. So we still have control when we are awake, but when we are asleep, we don't have much control. But we can still control how we focus and how we redirect our energy even when we are in the unconscious state, or even when we are in a state of sleep. That's why there is stages of deep sleep without any dreams, that is considered as mode of ignorance. Then sleep with a lot of dreams, that's considered in the mode of passion. And relaxed sleep where you're not having much dreams, so that's considered to be in the mode of goodness. So one has to regulate his eating and sleeping habits so that he maintains an equanimity or a balance. With respect to sleep, there's a lot of research nowadays about the quality of sleep that you get and how that's connected to the memory that you have, your intelligence, and how that's correlated. Bhagavatam has described that long, long ago about how intelligence has got various aspects to it, like you have misapprehension, you doubt something, then you inquire, then you come to correct conclusion, then sleep. So these are all different aspects of intelligence. And this time of the year being, at least from the academic point of view, a lot of students go through their exams and assignments and all that. So biggest fear for a student is what? Failing the exam. Still now I sometimes get nightmares about, oh, I'm in an exam, I haven't read for it. It's so deeply ingrained. But Krishna explains that how one can regulate his vital force or prana by, in the chapters about regulating oneself, in the chapters about regulating oneself, Krishna describes in the 5th and the 6th chapters how a yogi has to regulate himself by not eating so much or sleeping too much. And wherever his mind wanders, he has to bring it back under the control of the self. Now the same principle can be applied for students who are facing this fear of exams. How? By regulating their breathing, because prana that is described here, and pranayama means regulating. So regulating your breath. So that at the physical level helps you to remain attentive when you are receiving knowledge. So at a physical level, if you are able to regulate your breath and have a strong physical body, that will help you to mentally focus. So by regulating the breath and by regulating the eating. So by eating is another way that the prana enters our body. So that's why we help the uni students by giving prasadam at least once or twice a week, that they don't have to worry about getting quality food. So one way that the life energy enters is through the food. And as described in the Gita, it is Krishna who is digestive fire, and he is the one who digests the food. So if you are able to regulate the time of taking food and the quantity and the quality of the food, especially when it is, when you want to focus and remember, that also plays a crucial role, where the prana, the vital force within your body, has to be regulated. Now, as far as the mental state is concerned for remembering information, one of the neuroscientists, and he has done a bit of research, and he was saying about how maintaining a proper emotional state is very crucial for remembering information. Physically, we have regulated our breath, we have regulated our eating, so that alone is not sufficient. Because this knowledge describes about how to keep the field of activity, which is your own body and mind, proper. And we are discussing about in the case of a student. So he wants to receive knowledge, he wants to remember it. As far as the mindset is concerned and the emotions that he has is very, very crucial for remembering information long term. I remember this aspect of mathematical equations, and then when it comes to the database and other information. So when I recollect that, I learned that with a lot of fear, that I will fail the exam, I have to read, Now what has happened is, because the emotion is a lot of times fear, the mental state is not proper. The information may stay for a short period. So when you are in the fear, you observe yourself, like your breath, your prana will be not so regulated. Or for any for that matter, any negative emotions that you have, if you observe yourself, your breath may not be very proper. So we are starting from regulating our breath, regulating the food. Then what sort of mindset that a student must have to have this, receive this knowledge, remember it not only for a short period but for a long term, is that one has to maintain a highly healthy emotional state when he is acquiring knowledge, so that it sticks with him for long and it becomes part of you rather than just being in the short term memory. So the emotions that you need to have are positive emotions like hope, gratitude. Love is considered as the topmost emotion that a person can have, and a positive emotion. And when I was reading through this information about how these emotional states are described, I was able to correlate that with the Bhakti Yoga process, where the process itself is designed in such a way that you develop love to the Supreme Lord, and which according to neuroscience is the topmost positive emotion that a person can have, is love. So now a bhakti yogi student can understand why the practice that he is doing by regulating his prana, by regulating his eating, all this wisdom is coming from the Gita. If a person at the level of a student, he is able to understand and value why he is doing what he is doing. You may think that why do we spend so much energy in chanting and doing devotional activities and focusing on the proper mood, proper mindset? It all has effects on you as a person. More specifically, here we are discussing about a student. So you are tuning yourself up for receiving knowledge by putting yourself in a proper mindset, so that whatever information that you get, with the proper mindset that you have, will stay with you for long term. So that same expert in the neuroscience, he gave an equation where information multiplied by emotion equals long term memory. So you have tons of information and the emotion is zero or negative, what do you get? Zero. It won't stay in your long term memory. So that's why as Bhakti Yoga practitioners, we get information from the Gita and from the Bhagavatam as to how to keep your field of activity, which is your own body, your mind, the breath, the prana, the life force, how to regulate it and how to attain that emotional state of loving Guru and Krishna. That's why the Guru Puja we sing, Prema Bhakti Jahoite Avidya Vinasha Jale. So the fact that you are coming and attending Guru Puja or Darshanarati or Mangalarati, if you are doing so, you are setting yourself up for a very strong emotional state, which is love. Love for Guru and Krishna and for other fellow devotees. So if you are setting yourself up and then you are going to the outside world to work or to study or to learn, which means that positive mindset is where the Bhakti Yoga tradition and the process helps us to regulate yourself, giving you the knowledge about how to manage your own body, your mind, your senses, which is what Narad Muni is giving this knowledge to Puranjana. One may think it is some ancient text which is giving so much of allegories, it's not relevant for me. No. It is actually highly relevant at this day and age, which is the age of distraction. So the touch of a phone, you get thousands of distractions. So this chanchalam is too much, and too much of chanchala during the day is going to affect your sleep. And as discussed earlier, sleep will affect your memory, which will affect your performance at work or in studies. So this is a well-rounded process where we set you up nicely during the start of the day with japa, mangalarati, kirtan. It all sets you up in a high vibrational state. And these are all divine sound, like chanting Hare Krishna, praising Guru. All this sets you up in a high emotional state where you are all set to remember, receive, and also create. So the prana, the life force, we should be using that to create rather than destroy. So this way, by giving you the knowledge of how your body works, how by regulating the body that affects the mind, and then how the mind and intelligence and you as a living being are residing in the body, how by controlling your senses, Krishna describes one who controls his senses and mind, for him super soul is very easy to attain. And later chapters of Gita describes that the remembrance and forgetfulness comes from Krishna. So this is how, by seeing the application of this knowledge in your life, you will be more inspired to learn more and share it with others also. So this knowledge will not only help us when we are in this world, it will also help us when we are leaving this body. That's why the transmigration aspect is there. When the living body leaves this body, living entity leaves this body, what kind of body you get depends on the consciousness you have. So the process of bhakti yoga guarantees that even in the extreme case, so a person throughout his life was very pious and he remembers Krishna, but towards the end somehow he forgets, then what happens? So this question was answered as to Krishna's describes that he, for a devotee, Krishna says that I will force myself into his memory and I will remember him. This was, I read a quote from, I think it was from Varaha Puran. Yadi vadati doshena mad bhakta pujayanvita. If my devotee, for some reason, at the time of death, he forgets me, I will remember him and I will deliver him. So the process helps you to live in this world. You are not only a conscious living being, you are seeking happiness, and while living in this world, you are able to perform effectively at studies or at work, and it also helps you how to leave this world. And that's why the feet of Krishna is described as a boat which can carry you across, which can deliver you out of this material existence. And he can shrink this whole ocean of material existence to that of a water in a calf's footprint. Samashita ye pada pallava plavam mahat padam punyesho murare bhavam budhir vatsa padam param padam 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 yad vipatamna tesham. The material world, there is danger at every step, but because we are taking shelter of Krishna, Guru, and his teachings, that material existence gets shrunk to the water in a calf's footprint, and we can easily cross over it. So that's how this knowledge in the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita are highly relevant. This human form is very rare, so please take advantage of this, and as you feel inspired, share it with others. That's a famous tagline. Share this video, share this, do a like, so share this knowledge, and that way you'll also become dear to the Lord. So I'll conclude here and see if there are any questions related to what we discussed today, and comments, corrections. I'll give them mic.
A few years ago when I first heard a neuroscientist say what you were saying, that the most powerful way to remember is to connect the event to an emotion, it confirmed what I experienced when I was a young man in the 70s. I'm committed to memory the Gita because I realized after a couple of years in the movement, in those days, it was pretty wild. I realized really nobody knew what was going on except Prabhupada. I mean, completely. So when Macmillan came out with the complete Gita, I sat down with it, you know, warts and all, with all the mistakes even. At least I said, at least let me remember, commit to memory these verses. So it took me 6 years. And while I was doing it, I just hit on it just by experience. It would take me about 3 days to commit a verse to memory, so I knew it, no matter what mood I was in, no matter what time of day. Then I had a regular program of review. But I would live with the verse for 3 days. I would, you know, put the English and the Sanskrit and the word for word on an index card in my pocket, and I would take it out periodically to review it. So after living with it for a few days, there were experiences attached to the verse, because I would pull it out and I would apply it. I would try it out on Sankirtan, on people. So it really worked. It was really powerful, because it wasn't just words, but it was experience. And there's emotions attached to that experience. So when I did hear it just a few years ago, I thought, oh, that's true. That's the way to do it. So thank you.
Prabhu, as it was mentioned about subconscious mind, so to what extent does the subconscious mind dictate our activity in bhakti yoga?
To what extent the subconscious mind dictates our activities in bhakti yoga? Depends how strong your intelligence is and how much of influence your subconscious mind has. As per the research, majority of your current way of behavior is dictated by your subconscious mind. So that is why if you see at the process of bhakti yoga, it is creating a lot of impressions on you, so that you're used to traveling in a particular path. Now we're making a different path and asking us to travel there. So our tendency may be to go to the old path, but then we pull ourselves back and try to follow the new path. And then over a period you're used to going this way, then it will, as you yourself may recollect about getting up for Mangalarati or chanting japa in the morning, initial days it would have been like riding a bicycle uphill. But with the help of devotees and by the instructions of Guru, we do that. So that's why the positive association, then that you're given that pull. And then the process will start to work. Then when you come to the point of diksha, then your sinful actions are taken, majority of it. Then something remains. So from then onwards, it's up to you to put more effort and more energy and redirect your desires, your attachment, what you're getting attracted to. You just have to redirect it. So during this process, initially it may seem that the whole consciousness is becoming cleaner. Prabhupada gives the example of a lake which throwing stones at it constantly, and then it's getting disturbed. By following the four regulative principles, we're stopping throwing stones into it. And by chanting, as described, it's like cleansing of the mirror. So the process begins. So then you'll see some in the pond, when nobody stops throwing any stones, it'll remain still. But still, from within, inside the lake, some disturbance might come, it will come out and pop. So that's where the actual cleansing from the level of subconscious, the deep-rooted, unwanted samskaras or impression might come up. Not might, it will come up if you have acquired them. Now the way to deal with that is how much powerful that is. We need to be very honest with that and take the guidance. So that's why the six loving exchange, one of them is revealing your heart to to Guru and senior Vaishnavas? Because the whole process as such is also kind of gives you a road map depending on where you are at. These kind of impediments may come. Interesting to note that the anartha nivritti process itself is described in detail as to various types of anarthas and when, what stage of bhakti it might come. So, rough idea is given to us. So, with all this help, we try to overcome. So, when our subconscious mind too much is there, then we need to take more shelter of the devotional process, whichever appeals to you the most, you work on it. And then start to purify with the guidance of Guru and the senior Vaishnavas. So that way the force of that will eventually come down, but expect a tough fight depending on how much conditioned you are. That much time has to be spent, but the good thing is at least it is getting brought out and it is getting dealt with rather than just keeping it aside. So that's why when the process is compared, bhakti yoga process is compared with other processes. Suppose I have a cup of water and then there is water in it and then there is a lot of dirt in it floating on top. But then when I leave it for some time, the dirt may settle down. And may think that it's all clean. That's how the other yoga processes might... It's all just to regulate your breathing and all that. Now you feel peace and that's it. But what it has let the dirt settle down. And later on, some period, I take this cup and shake it. Again, it's going to come up. So that's not the complete fix. So bhakti yoga process is we are pouring fresh water into it, so that whatever is in comes out and then fresh water goes into it. So depending on how much is there in the subconscious, that accordingly it has to be brought out and cleansed through the bhakti yoga process. So I wish Prabhu was there, he could have answered more then. Yeah. We'll conclude here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.